This is tape four in a series of tapes with Dr. Norbert Untersteiner. It's the 16th of November 2000 on a telephone interview between myself, Brian Shoemaker, in North Bend, Oregon, Dr. Untersteiner at his home in Seattle. So what else are you involved with now, polar-wise, besides Medea?
I didn't say that. In 1998, I was invited, sort of by an informal telephone call. No, I was not invited. I was told that the University of Alaska has an endowed professorship. It was endowed by several years ago by a grant from the state of Alaska. They put $1 million or something like that in an account, and from the proceeds from the yield of that investment, they fund a chair that they called Chapman Chair, after the great Sidney Chapman, who had an intimate relationship. Chapman was the Mr. Geomagnetism and Mr. Aurora for many years.
Head of the IGY.
And he was one of the founding fathers, one of the four founding fathers of the IGY. And he spent time in Fairbanks, and he spent time at NCAR also in Boulder. And so they have a Chapman building up there, and they decided to do this to honor Sidney Chapman, and they had hired Keith Runcorn, famous English solid earth geophysicist, fellow of the Royal Society, and Runcorn got killed. Tragically, in San Diego, got murdered in San Diego, and so the Chapman chair was vacant, and they said, well, this is vacant, wouldn't you be interested in it? And I said, no, well, really not. This was three years ago. I don't want to do this anymore. So they said, well, but wouldn't you, maybe you should apply anyway so that we get some applicants. So I sent in my CV and said, yes, I would be interested. Well, and before you know it, and I went up there and gave a couple of talks and blah, blah, blah. And so before you know it, I'm now Chapman Professor of Physical Science at the University of Alaska as of 1999. I have established a visiting lecturer program up there, and I spend February, March, and April in Fairbanks, and I cycle through about 10 to 12 important people from the field to lecture, to give lectures, typically two a week, Tuesday and Thursday, about any topic that has to do with polar climatology, and then we take reprints and we bind them together, and those are the Chapman lecture series, and the students or everybody attends gets a copy. The attendance is sort of between 10 and 30 people, a handful, 3 or 4 or 5 graduate students, but mostly faculty and researchers who come to these lectures, and it's been very, very interesting. I like Fairbanks, I like the University of Alaska, and in parallel now I've been involved in various sort of more informal ways with the International Arctic Research Center. This is the U.S.-Japanese new building that is attached to the old Geophysical Institute building, Akasofu, resigned from his directorship of the Geophysical Institute and is now director of IARC. And I've been functioning as sort of an informal advisor a little bit on matters of IARC. This is all still in flux, and I don't know if it's going to lead to anything, but it might. So anyway, this is I consider this as a side activity in my role as chaplain chair. I promised the University of Fairbanks, at the University of Alaska, Fairbanks, no more than 3 years as the chaplain chair. The third year is coming up, and I have not talked to anybody about the future. Because, you know, at my age, I don't want to make any long commitment. Maybe I'll tack on another year or two, but it remains to be seen. So that's my besides Medea, that's my other current Arctic activity. I still have some data, believe it or not, unused data back from IGY, and I'm going to salvage those and write a couple more papers, but that's just sort of what I do in my own time. Okay?
Okay. Looking back on it, how do you view your life in science?
Well, I for me, I would say almost the right thing. Maybe I would prefer to be an engineer and build hydroelectric dams in the mountains or something like that. But given the possibilities, I think I was really lucky. It was a very good time to be a scientist. It was a very good time to be on the right side of the Cold War. You could feel good about everything you did. I'm very happy I left Europe. I feel far more at home. Now, I like to go back to Austria because it's very pretty, but contribution to the world is mainly Arnold Schwarzenegger and the crystal from Swarovski.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's wonderful to be there, to go skiing or to go hiking and go to all my haunts where I was when I was a boy, but I'm not at home anymore there. I'm home here.
Are you a U.S. citizen?
And I've been a U.S. citizen since 73.
Yeah, my wife feels the same way.
And I would never go back. And I'm really glad I left. So, and I think it's, the amount of things that I had to do in my life that I really hated are really quite small. Yeah, well, of course, I hated to be a soldier in the German army in 1944. Nearly killed me, literally. Of course, I hated that. But that wasn't very long. But compared to a person who has to go every day to some boring job and do something that they don't really enjoy doing, simply because it brings home the bacon, has my full sympathy. You know, my life wasn't like that at all. Most of what I did was very interesting, and if I had been born independently wealthy, I might have done the same thing just for my own amusement. So, yeah, I think I was lucky, and I did the right thing. I should really say that my father thought that would be the right thing for me because I was clearly brainwashed. I executed everything that he wanted me to do pretty much. And if he had lived to see it, I think he would have been very happy that I did most of the things that he would have wanted to do if he had chosen another path.
Okay, well, let's end it there, unless you can think of something else that's pertinent.
Well, I think that's... Basically, maybe we can revisit this a little bit when I see the transcript.
That's a good thought. No one else has suggested that. Of course, none of them have got their transcripts yet, except Gordon Cartwright.
Yeah.
Do you know Gordon?
No.
Well, he's the guy that first wintered with the Russians at Marigny.
I know the name, but
yeah.
I don't think.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, he's 91, and he's been pressing me to get it, and he even offered to fund the transcription. So he's got it, and we're kind of using him as a guinea pig as to how we're going to do transcriptions. And what I'll do is get you a tape. I'm going to do that after the first of the year. I've got to get some paperwork done. I get on the plane next Sunday, week from Sunday, for Argentina, and I'll be gone till New Year. Lecture and tourists. We're going to South Georgia. It's going to be fun. We're looking at Shackleton's, where he went over the mountain and doing all this stuff. And they pay me to talk with slides. I can do it endlessly. So I'll be doing copies of the tapes. The main copy that we've got here goes to Ohio State. It'll be archived. They'll make copies. We'll send you a copy, but we'll send one to the transcriptionist, and she'll send the hard copy, computer for both of us. Computer copy to me. I'll look at it, and what I did with Gordon Cartwright, I inserted a couple questions for what I'd asked him on an aside, and we turned the tape back on, and he just plunged right in, so I inserted those as questions. But he told me on the phone that he wants to add some big sections, because he left them out. And we've decided to do that in bold, so we can keep... I don't particularly care if we save the old tape or not. However, Ohio State archivists want to keep that, so we'll have a different style of type for insertions.
Yeah, okay.
As far as I'm concerned, between interviewees and myself, we can reword what's said, because sometimes there's a lot of maybes, and it gets this gal that's doing the transcription work did it for 25 years at the University of Illinois. She happens to be my daughter's mother-in-law, and she actually can do these things without... she has a foot pedal, turn the tape off, but she doesn't use it. She types along as fast as the tape rolls, and she gets all those little things. I had to clean them up for Gordon's to make sense of what I said, but more so with him, because he was searching his brain. This what we've done here has really got me thinking that, goddamn, we can sure do this a lot faster if I can just pick up the phone and spend an afternoon with somebody on the telephone. You and I knew one another, but most of these guys have never met. And to call them up and suggest something like that, I don't know how it's going to work, but I'm going to give it a try in the spring. As you know, Karen Brewster, up at the University of Alaska at the Department of Oral History there, she's going to do 7 interviews for us, for me. I'm kind of running it, and we've closed that out since you and I were in Boulder together. And I haven't heard back from her. She was up in Fairbanks, Barrow at the time. But we've given her the list. We've got her funding, and I said, and if this works out, I'm going to try and hire other interviewers who, say, live in the Northeast that can get all those people up there. And there's actually a lot of people down in Florida who are retired. So I think this has worked out pretty good.
I think so. I think so too. It was relaxed and you know, when I see it, I might wish that I had emphasized things differently, but I think we covered a lot of ground.
It's a very good interview. Yours and Willie Weeks have been the two longest and the most thorough. And I think that probably is because both of you have published a lot and you're used to organizing your thoughts, whereas many others, particularly the non-academics like the pilots or the ship drivers, they bounce around all over the place.
Well, yeah, if you're used to lecturing, it forces you to sort of say things in a certain, try to organize them in a certain way so that the audience can follow easily.
I'm going to pick a couple of these guys who I've had experience in the field with, and I'm going to say, let's try this by telephone. The other advantage on it, some of these guys get pretty old, and after an hour or two of taping, they're worn out.
Yeah.
For instance, Lloyd Beebe over at Squim. Have you been over to the Olympics game park there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, he was the chief photographer for Walt Disney in IGY. He spent a year at Little America. He went ashore on the first boat when there was nothing there, and filmed it from start to finish, and also the building of Bird Station.
He
owns the Olympic Game Park. That's him. He is the Olympic Game Park at Squim. Lloyd is. And
I asked you this before. Is he related to this guy with the steel ball in deep sea?
I got back to him, but I didn't ask the question because there was a little crisis when I called, and that was on my list of a couple things to discuss with him.
Does he live there?
He lives there up on the hill, and these animals roam around, and he had some wolverines that were tame that were looking in the windows at us, and he had a puma he put over his shoulders to show me, and he had 27 grizzly bears there. Did you know of or see the...
Oh, yeah, I've driven through there many times.
Well, Grizzly Adams on TV was filmed with his animals.
Yeah.
All of the Disney wildlife series... Well, let me give you a little history. I got it all on tape for Lloyd. He started trapping in the 20s and 30s. He's 88 now, as a bounty hunter, and he started keeping some of the young, and then he started actually trapping the adults, bears, elk, pumas, and you name it, wolverines. And then he got interested in movies. A very interesting person. He does, didn't finish high school. Decided that he wanted to make movies of his animals, and basically he's got away with them, and even the adults he's trained not to be non-aggressive with, at least with him and many of his handlers, but he can command them to do things that they would do in the wild, like chase a rabbit down, release a rabbit, have the puma go get it, and coyotes and bear and wolves, and he even had three polar bears there for a while that he did after he filmed Wild Arctic for Walt Disney. All those movies were filmed with Disney. Well, anyway, he sent his first movie of his animals to Walt Disney, and they called him right away, and they had been thinking of doing this series on Vanishing Prairie and the Wild Arctic, and you remember all those Disney movies of... He's the guy, and they're all his animals.
I knew that some of these bears were in movies, and they were trained, and they were sort of put out to pasture there.
That's right. He had three polar bears there. One lived for 46 years, and he's got pictures of him riding it. He's got pictures of him and several of his workers riding. Then Disney sent him for a year to Brazil, and he did the same thing down there, and he left that game park behind down there, and he visits it even today once in a while. He bought some of the workers home from there who still live on his ranch there. But anyway, I started to tell you, he gets real tired.
Yeah.
And I'm pressing him, and he couldn't even talk straight. It couldn't, you know. And so I said, well, let's take a break and go to lunch. I had to do that with Gordon Cartwright, too. But Gordon rejuvenated and came back. And Lloyd did for a little bit, and we finished. We were about finished up anyway. Anyway, I called him back after I came back from Boulder, and his wife answers the phone. She says, did you know he had a stroke when he was talking to you? And I said, no, I didn't know. She says, yeah, that's when he couldn't talk straight. I said, well, how is he? She said, I'll put him on. Well, he's fine. But he was in the hospital for a week. He went in that night. And I'm kind of sensitive to that. I'm really watching guys real
quick. If you deal a lot with us old farts, I have to be careful.
Yeah, well, it turns out, you know Martin Pomerantz. Martin's a very old friend of mine from the 60s in Antarctica, but...
He was also an early member of the PRB.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was IGY. He had studies in Thule and at Swarthmore. And
astronomist, or what is he? What does he do?
Well, originally started with cosmic ray studies. Upper atmosphere cosmic ray studies, balloons at 135,000 feet. And he has cosmic ray facilities, well, they're still operating today, at Thule, Churchill, Swarthmore, I think Haleakala, McMurdo, and South Pole. But he got into bigger than that because the balloons he was putting up, he realized could be captured by the polar gyre. And stay aloft for 16 or 17 days looking out into space to carry all kinds of things. So he got into astronomy and all the astronomy that's done at South Pole today and all the construction that's going on down there today is the Pomerantz Center. And that's across the board from the neutrino studies to cosmic rays, of course. And he was a collaborator with I'm trying to think of started the IGY. He's a cosmic ray guy too. Van Allen.
Van Allen.
Yeah. Sidney Chapman was at Van Allen's house, and Lloyd Berchter leaned across the table to him and said, "I think it's time we had a third polar year." And said, I got all that on tape from Van Allen.
Yeah.
But anyway, some of these guys get so tired we have to take breaks. And it's hard for a tape guy to say, well, okay, I'll come back next week, because you're talking about a plane ticket to and from and rent a cars and all that, and you try and get it all in one shot. I've got a feeling if I see a guy in the future and I'm doing that, at least I'm going to say, look, we can finish this by tape, because I think this went good regardless of the phones breaking down. And possibly, if I work out my techniques right, maybe I can sit at home and do most of these. And it'd be much more effective.
With this speakerphone, I mean, it is so handy, you know.
Yeah, I'll get one too. I think...
If you have a good speakerphone.
Yep.
I'm speaking at a very modest voice level. I'm 4 feet away from my phone, and it's and you sound perfectly good, and boy, it beats traveling and traffic and all that.
Yeah, and we can say, look, let's. I'm going to go to lunch, or I've got to go shopping with Mama. That's the other thing, is I've had guys rushing it because they had something else to do.
Yeah.
And if you get to a point like that, you can say, look, if this is too tiring, or if you got to do something else, why don't we continue it on next week? Like we did, we picked
Brian,
another. Yeah.
When you talk to the transcriptionist,
mm-hmm.
Make sure they write at least double space.
Oh yes, she does that.
With a wide margin.
Yes.
So that you don't have to struggle to fit the little scribble stuff in there.
Yes. Actually, it's almost quadruple space, because we're going to publish these in double space, or sort of double space, a good space between them.
Okay, good.
And so I had plenty of room when I was working on Cartwrights. Anyway, I'll be back for 2 or 3 weeks in January, and I'll get your tapes to you then, and I'll get... the copies to her, but she's already started on a batch of the first ones.
Should I give you my Fairbanks address? I'm going there on the 1st of February.
Yeah, let me put it here, or I'll put it right on in my notes. Okay.
Chapman Chair.
Mm-hmm.
College of Engineering, College of Science, Engineering, and Mathematics. Just do CSEM. CS as in science.
Uh huh.
CSEM as in mathematics. CSEM. 354 Natural Science Facility.
354 Natural
Science Facility, University of Alaska Fairbanks. 99775.
Have you met William Ransom Wood up there in your goings and comings?
Not this time, but I met him years ago.
Yeah.
When he was chancellor, president.
Yes. He writes and calls me all the time with all kinds of ideas for different things. I think he's lonely. But yeah, I met him when I was at Barrow. But he's very interested in the polar society. And so if you run across him, just say hello for me.
Okay, I will.
And Sionis Akasofu too.
Okay, yeah, you know.
Not very well. I know him when I was at Barrow, and then I knew him. We had a conference up at the North Slope a few years ago, and he was there just finishing off the building of the International Center, and he gave a briefing on it, and we talked.
Okay, Brian. Good.
Okay, and...
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. What's your phone number up there, by the way?
In Fairbanks?
Yeah. 907.
907 474-7758.
7758.
And the secretary, I'm not there a lot. Just a sec. The secretary's name is Ali Cook. A-L-I. And, Ali. Her name is Alexis. Ali Cook. Just as in Cook.
Uh-huh.
And her phone number is...
All right. Okay, I assume your email is the same.
It will be switched over. Yeah, email stays the same. It's automatically forwarded.
Yep.
And Brian, I will inquire about Link Washburn, and I'll send you an email if I find out it.
Yeah, that's good. Karen Brewster, I've told her about you and that you're interested in the program, that you've been interviewed, and I don't think she'll need any help. She knows what she's doing. But if somebody up there inquires as to why we're doing all this, I'm going to suggest that she direct them to you.
Okay, I'll make contact with her.
Good. Okay. Well, my regards to your family.
Thank you very much. The same to you, and I hope you have a wonderful trip.
Well, thank you. I'm looking forward to this one. Yeah.
Okay. Take care.
We'll see you. Bye. Thanks.